Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at www.sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Day after Canada Day, I am your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. We'll hear from him later on in the show. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert he is. Gentlemen, a belated happy Canada Day to you both. Welcome to the program.
Drew, you're a little subdued right now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Jack's not.
I'm not subdued. I'm awake now, that's for sure.
Yeah, you seem subdued. Is everything okay? Did your Canada Day go all right?
My Canada Day was fabulous, I must say. A nice golf game, a good time on Osborne last night.
I know you weren't signed to a four-year contract, Drew, but...
You know what?
You signed your lifetime contract with your girlfriend.
One of them.
Fiancé.
I've lost my fiancé. Funny thing is, actually, I was approached by a number of general managers after my last adult hockey league game, and I decided to stay with you guys. I didn't want to, jump
four ship. Four goals.
Two assists, too.
Apparently, the two assists weren't marked on the board, according to a teammate of yours.
It's true. They weren't marked down. But for the record, if I'm scoring four goals in any sort of organized hockey game, we should all probably just quit playing hockey immediately.
If you score four goals in an NHL season last year, you probably got a four-year deal at about $1 million per.
Yeah.
Or if you're Steve Tambellini, you gave Ben Eager a three-year contract.
It was only worth
1.1 a year.
1.1 a year? Well, yeah. It's totally worth it.
Yeah, three-year contract for a guy who can hardly play in your top 12. Takes stupid penalties, is undisciplined. Obviously, those two go hand in hand. Has been moved to many teams over the past year. Goes from Chicago to Atlanta to San Jose. Nobody wants to keep him. But yeah, give him a three-year deal. I mean, those guys aren't on the waiver wire all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a... I tell you what, Canada Day is a day for celebrating our country's coming to existence.
Sure, yeah.
But it's also a day to acknowledge just how stupid some general managers are.
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah. Ezzy, I'll say hello to you before I get going.
Hey, Richie, and hello, Drew. Yesterday was quite ridiculous, but,
you're just talking about Osborne.
Yeah, I'm just talking about Osborne Village for Canada Day, but this whole business is, and we're not going to get into this right now about the salary floor and how much it was raised and, how it's basically what the salary cap, ceiling was after the lockout in 2005, mm-hmm. But these teams have to spend more money, and that's why they're giving out these contracts. The Buffaloes, the Floridas, they were bottom-spending teams, and they still kind of will be.
Well, not Buffalo.
And Buffalo's not anymore.
Maybe not Buffalo, but Florida will be, Columbus. And
There's no rule that they have to give it out to players who don't deserve it. There's no rule that says they have to spend their money on players who aren't good enough to deserve that money.
Well, this is what Richie and me were talking about yesterday, and this is what Richie said, and I'll let him speak more to this. But Richie said, why not sign some of these guys, like Jovanovski on Florida, to a 1 year or 2 year, $6 million per year deal instead of giving him 4 years at $14 million? It's absolutely ridiculous. We're going to be in a situation. I mean, we ran into a situation with Wade Redden and Sheldon Souré playing in the AHL for $6.5 million because you just can't, in today's NHL, have a defenseman that's only producing X amount of points playing for $6 million, and that's what we're going to have with Jovanovski in a few years.
There's one prevailing theme that's going to be talked about throughout this show, and that's there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal.
That's right, but there's a lock bad with some 4 or 5 year deals.
There's no such thing as a bad 1 year deal, and we're going to talk about that throughout the show. The amount of term that was given out over the course of yesterday and the two or three days prior is laughable, as far as I'm concerned. And once again, the NHL general managers as a whole, for the most part, have proven that they're not capable of being disciplined and running their franchise at a macro level. Everything is done in the heat of the moment. Everything is done in a bidding war. You know, they make the decision. It's like playing at the poker table, making the decision. You're in the heat of the moment, making that decision, and not thinking. Thinking straight, not looking at the numbers, not calculating your odds. And they don't do that. They sign contracts that they eventually are going to regret. I mean, I could name one, I could name 10, and we'll go through it. We'll go about listing them throughout the show.
That's a good segue into let me break down how the show is going to work. We have 6 interviews coming up on today's program. They start at 9:30 in the morning. 9:30, Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. Is going to join us. 9:45, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. 10 a.m., Mark Seidel. He's the chief scout of North American Central Scouting. We're going to go back, talk about the Jets' draft haul from last weekend. So Mark spoke very highly about the Jets' draft, gave them an A+. We'll hear in detail why that was the case. Coming up at 10:30 from the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington is going to join us. 11 a.m., from the Columbus Dispatch, Aaron Portsline is going to join us. And to wrap up the guests at 11:30 in the morning, 11:30 this morning, Derek Meach, the first ever free agent signing of the new Winnipeg Jets, is going to join us here on the program. Throughout the show, we're going to go down division by division, team by team, break down what all the contract moves, really evaluate which teams made smart decisions. Those are few and far between.
They were.
And which teams made really ridiculous decisions. Those were a lot more prevalent, of course.
What GMs made ridiculous decisions by not being in their city on July 1st.
Well, we're going to talk about the...
That might have actually helped.
We're going to talk about Brian Burke and everything else along those lines. In fact, why don't we start off this segment? Let's start off by breaking down the Northeast Division.
Northeast Division.
Starting in Montreal, the Montreal Canadiens made one free agent signing this yesterday. And, of course, there still are
And wow, did they get him for a bargain basement price of $4.5 million a year.
That's Eric Cole. Eric Cole goes from the Carolina Hurricanes to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, Eric Cole is a nice player. I think he can, you know, he can provide some size to a small Montreal set of forwards. Is he worth $4.5 million a year?
No, he's not. I mean, what Eric Cole brings to the table is a very good skater. He's responsible defensively. He's an up-and-down type of winger. He doesn't have great hands. He's not very good on the power play. Now, saying that, generally the Habs don't need as much help on the power play. They could use some help, but even strengthen a guy going to the net. So he brings a lot of the qualities that the Habs have been coveting. Don't get me wrong. But not only give him $4.5 a year, once again, the issue is term. 4 years. He's had back problems. He's had neck problems.
He broke his neck 2 years ago.
A guy who goes to the net, you know, I think he's kind of back to going to the net maybe like he was a couple of years ago, has a risk of injury. A 4-year contract seems like a risky proposition to me. And, I mean, last year he got 52 points, and that's what you're hoping to get from him over the past couple of years. It's been 52 points the year before. He only played 40 games. He had 16 points the year before that. He got about 42 points, so 51 points a year before. So you're looking at a 40 to 50 point player. You're paying 4.5 for a 40 to 50 point player. It's an overpay in that respect. On a per year basis, it's an overpay. Term, it's an overpay. But does he bring to the table what you want to bring to the table? Sure. I mean, he's 6'2", 205, but he's also 32 years old. So you just give a 32-year-old guy 4 years.
With a history of injury.
And expectation of about 50 points a year. Who can't really play, he's not very good on the power play, and isn't the best passer, is more of a scorer.
And Richie, just to quickly take...
And it wasn't the worst signing.
No, it wasn't even in the ballpark of the worst signing of the day.
Just quickly, you know, because we have, you know, 50 more signings to go through. I think we like Cole. He's a good player.
Oh, yeah.
He's good on Carolina. He's had the injury problems, then went to Edmonton and struggled, then went back to Carolina. Offers... Some things, well, like you said, he's responsible defensively. He's a big guy. He crashes, maybe not as much as he used to.
Right.
But the problem is, you know, when Richie says that this isn't a good signing on a per-year basis, it's also not a good team decision here. Because now you're committing... A guy like Eric Cole, perfect opportunity to sign him to a one-year $4.5 million deal. Okay, you give him that money because you need the size, you need the goals... And the thing is, they're in the Eastern Conference, so you especially need the size. But Eric Cole isn't going to set take the Habs to the next level. If you're going to sign a four-year deal, maybe go after a Ville Leino or something like that. That guy would have been better suited to four or five years.
Ville Leino is now Wayne Gretzky based on the money that he's getting paid. So
I'm just saying, Drew.
He got the same. He got $4.5 million a year.
He's 27 years old as opposed to 32, and he gives you more of an offensive upside. So Eric Cole, he's going to give you some size, but when you're evaluating what impact he's going to have on a team, you're signing him for 4 years.
At this point, Leino takes you from 27 to 33, his six-year deal, which is too long, first of all. Cole's already 32, and you're getting him from your 32 to 36 years for a player who's kind of worn down a lot. Remember also, Cole produced a good 52 points last year. It was 52 points, 26 and 26. He played a majority of his season last year with either Eric Staal.
Yep.
And Corey Stillman, or Tuomas Ruttu and Jeff Skinner.
Yeah.
He played basically the whole season with Staal. Almost all of his ice time was with Staal. Second most was with Skinner and Ruttu. Think about it that way.
Playing with some talented players.
Scotty Gomez is not what he used to be, and isn't Eric Staal, period.
Yeah. So you're saying you could see a
drop. Plekanec, obviously, is a good player to play with, but he's producing those points at playing a significant amount of time that even strength with Eric Staal. It just doesn't make
a ton of sense. I think you're right about that. We want to hear from you about your opinions on some of these signings. You can get us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can get us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. You can send us an email, info@IllegalCurve.com. And, of course, you can join the live chat taking place at www.IllegalCurve.com. Michael Remus is operating the R desk over there. Let's move down the, I'm trying to think of the highway now. Is that the 417? Over to Ottawa, where the Senators had a quiet day yesterday. The only signing they really made was Alex Auld, 1 year, $1 million, to be the backup goaltender there for Craig Anderson.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I was just about to say, aside from, we're talking about the Eric Cole and Montreal signing, aside from the Buffalo Sabres, there weren't very many moves. I mean, Ottawa signed Alex Auld to a one-year deal, and he's going to be their backup. He's been signed by the Habs.
Deal.
He's coming from Montreal. Risk-free. I mean, you're ensuring that you have a veteran goalie behind Anderson. Nothing spectacular. He's a well-respected guy.
Yeah, the truth is, if you have an injury, you're going to pull up Robin Lehner anyways.
That's right. You
really need a long stretch of games played.
That's right. All will play 15 games if everything goes well.
He's completely fine for a backup.
And for 1 year, again, there's no risk in a one-year deal. $1 million.
16 games last year.
Yeah, he was probably perfectly average.
24 the year before.
Yeah, and you don't want to...
Senators have already had him once before, remember, guys. So.
That's right. They know what they're getting. They're getting a professional. He's not going to cause any sort of problem or anything
else. He plays on a different team every single year. It's kind of crazy.
Well, that's exactly that's the point of where he is. He's at his career. He's a professional backup. He'll play, get paid $1 million a year for the next 5 years and play with five different teams each year.
Guys, you know what? We mentioned the Leafs earlier not making any moves.
Well, let's talk about the Leafs right now then. It's a good segue.
They didn't make any moves, though. What are we going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about the Brian Burke fact, the part that Brian Burke was in Kandahar visiting troops in Afghanistan as opposed to being in Canada or in the United States on the start of NHL free agency.
You didn't seem to have an issue with it. I did.
I don't think I have an issue with it simply because he's not the one involved in contract negotiations. He's never been the guy who does the dollars and cents.
If you consider yourself in on Brad Richards, and all these guys are going to campaign, and we'll talk about that whole issue in a second anyways. That's Newport.
Yeah, when did Brad Richards become LeBron James?
Yeah, well, Newport Sports, that's Don, me, and Pat Morris. That kind of seems to be the way they do things. But overall, in terms of him not being there, if I am Brad Richards and the GM of the team isn't there, isn't pitching me, it does play a factor for me. And I wouldn't sign in Toronto anyways, but it would play a factor for me. On the other hand,
but apparently,
it's actually working backward. It's working in a backwards way. It's working well. Without Brian Burke there, It might convince free agents to not sign with them, thereby not having them pay these inflationary prices and handcuff themselves in the future. So Leafs fans should be happy.
To the Illegal Curve.
Leafs fans should be happy.
So what you're saying is that because the...
How does Racky pop into the show?
Yeah, I don't know. Racky's just popping up from the... But what you're saying is that because the general manager isn't there to pitch the free agents, the free agents are unimpressed with the team. They won't sign there.
Well, that and looking at the team on paper.
Yeah, won't sign there. And as a result, the Leafs are dodging a bullet because they're not overpaying for guys that they shouldn't be paying for anyways.
That's what I'm saying.
That seems to make some sense. Toronto was the only Eastern Conference team to not make a free agent signing last yesterday. The only team in the entire NHL in the Eastern Conference not to make a signing. Not to say that they won't do something today or going forward, as there's still some players on the available on the UFA market. But definitely a quiet day in Leafs land, and I'm not sure that ever goes well with the Leafs fans.
We can skip over Boston.
Boston made one signing, Benoit Pouliot. Let me just pull that one up. Yeah, Benoit Pouliot, 1 year, $1.1 million, and they lost Michael to Dallas.
Pouliot's which actually, was expected. Because
Pouliot, I don't mind at all.
Yeah.
For $1.1 million, yeah. 1 year, $1.1 million, I think he'll slot in there.
Good shot, can skate, big guy, have some potential. Maybe Claude Julien can get something out of him. It's 1 year, $1.1 million deal, no risk in it. Yeah. A little bit of reward option, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, of all this sort of under-the-radar signings that happened yesterday, yeah. I thought that this seemed like a good fit there.
Yeah, not bad.
Pouliot was a high draft pick who's been never taken the next step.
No, but
he's been inconsistent.
He'll know his role on Boston. He'll know his role and he'll perform it. For $1.1 million, there's no risk there at all. Yep. The final team in the Northeast Division is the busiest team of them all, one of the busiest teams in the entire NHL. That's the Buffalo Sabres. We're, of course, going to be joined by Mike Herring to talk about the big market, free-spending Buffalo Sabres. But quickly, here are the contract signings. Christian Ehrhoff, defenseman, 10 years, $40 million. Let me just get through them all before your head explodes.
Is that worse?
Okay, Richie? Hang on, let me get through them all.
That's a bad signing.
Cody McCormick re-signing, 3 years, $3.6 million, $1.2 per year. And then the final signing, Ville Leino, 6 years, $27 million, $4.5 million per season. And, of course, they acquired Robin Regier in a trade from the Calgary Flames earlier, or was it early last week?
Yeah, the Regier acquisition.
Not the draft.
I love that acquisition.
The Regier acquisition is they gave up Chris Butler for him, so they get a real top three defenseman in Robin Regier, who's under contract. Christian Ehrhoff, 10 years, $40 million. Let me start with that one. Did they see him play in Vancouver last season?
He's so bad defensively. I know he can move the puck. And I know they need a puck mover back there. But you can get a better guy who can move the puck and not pay $4 million for 10 years. And I don't care if his deal's front loaded. That doesn't mean anything. It's the cap hit. Forget when his contract is getting paid. It's the cap hit. $4 million a year. I know you're stretching it out to lower it down a bit, but the term. In 5 years, you have Ehrhoff at $4 million. He's awful defensively. I know he can move the puck. You can't find another defenseman who can cheap and move the puck.
I think you probably can.
You know, Richie referenced Eric Cole here, and this is the thing, you know.
Dear God, I mean, what are these?
I have to agree with this. Christian Ehrhoff had 50 points this year. He's put up good numbers. He's playing on Vancouver, though, one of the best, if not the best, offensive team. Those numbers
exactly.
are inflated.
And as Gabe pointed out on his blog, with the Sedins more than anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's getting power play minutes, Drew. So, okay, you know what? Buffalo, I like the Regier trade. I actually like the Leino trade, even though too many years... Signing, sorry. I like the Leino signing, too many years. The cap hit's not bad for a guy that's, you know, probably still hasn't had his best season, maybe. But Ehrhoff, you know, it's a bad contract is a bad contract these days, and that one is a bad one.
We're going to break down Buffalo in more detail later on in the show with Mike Harrington, like I said. The thing about Ehrhoff, and I just want to make this point quickly before we go to commercial break. The thing about Ehrhoff is, do you not think that he will drive Lindy Ruff completely insane with his defensive irresponsibility?
I agree. Now, they might employ him in such a way that allows for him, you know. Can I just put it to you this way, okay?
Yeah.
The Canucks defense, we know that there's this, I reference it on LegalCurve.com a lot for my analysis, and it's called zone start, and we talked about it before. What it is your offensive zone faceoffs with a ratio to your defensive zone. It doesn't count neutral zone, okay? And Christian Ehrhoff last year had a 61.5% offense versus defense.
Which means when there's a face-off in your defensive zone, to the best of their abilities, the Vancouver Canucks try not to use him in those situations.
But offensively, so obviously if you start more in the offensive zone, you're more likely to get points.
Right.
61.5%.
For a defenseman,
Gabe pointed that out too. Gabe pointed out he plays with the Sedins a lot in terms of line mates. This is all, basically what it's saying, this is inflated statistics. Go next year. Maybe he does whatever he had, 50 points this year. Maybe he produces 36, 37 next year.
Right. Playing
4 years for 10 mil. 4 years for 10 mil. The guy can hardly play any defense. He's terrible defensively. Ask the Bruins about it.
Yeah.
Ask other teams about targeting.
They go after him.
San Jose, who has a pretty good talent evaluation, gave him to conference rival Vancouver for not much.
Yeah. And Buffalo gave him 10 years and $40 million. It's a brave new world out there, and if you're a hockey player, you're guaranteed to be wealthy. Let's go to commercial break. When we come back, the Atlantic Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive. They make the car you drive, drive forever.
This is Brent Burns, and you're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, our boy Brent Burns, that's from the NHL Draft. Ezzy and Remus did a great job down there. All the coverage available at www.illegalcurve.com.
Good to have you guys back, by the way. We haven't said that yet.
It's good to be back.
I was sort of wavering on that. I was going to give it a couple more segments before I could decide on that, though.
I've been telling anyone who will listen, it was the best 2 days of my life. And, you know, me and Remus bonded and became closer friends. But it was unreal.
The weird part is there was two queen size beds and you guys shared the same bed both nights. That's
yeah, we actually
odd.
Shared a cot. Yeah.
Remus, can you get a nice. Remus, if it's possible, you can hop in here and can we get the audio of Ezzy snoring for next segment?
I think that's a good idea.
It's weird because first off, Remus woke me up with an elbow drop because we had to get up and go to the True North press conference. We were staying at the
It was 11 in the morning when the press conference started.
No, but we got up earlier to get our media credentials, Drew.
Nah. How was your omelet? Good omelet? Esco Morgan?
No, we went for an organic meal in downtown Minneapolis.
Stop.
With Kyle.
Stop.
Atlantic Division.
Continuing on division by division.
I thought you were about to play me snoring. What I was going to say is, why was Remus taping me snoring? That's the creepy part.
Can we go on with the
Yes, we can.
Thank you. We'll talk about your snoring later on in the show. Let's start with the Atlantic Division. Go to the New York Rangers. The Rangers, quiet. Of course, they're waiting on Brad Richards. That announcement is expected to come down sometime this morning while we're on the air, hopefully. So we'll bring it to you as soon as it becomes official.
Now it's between four. Quickly, as an aside, it's between four teams.
That's right. The Rangers, the Leafs, the Flames, and the Kings is apparently what he's deciding
he's
going
amongst. To the Leafs.
I still think the Rangers are the front runners.
Yeah, me too.
Here's what the Rangers did yesterday. Two sort of quiet moves. I have no problem with either of them. Michael Rupp coming from Pittsburgh to New York. 3 years, $4.5 million, $1.5 million per year. Centerman.
He'll likely play probably left wing on the fourth line.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere around there.
Responsible defensively.
Yeah. Doesn't really fine. Bother me that much. You know,
I mean, I don't know why it's 3 years, but that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, the term is a little long, but at $1.5 million, it's not the end of the world.
And the Rangers are a team that if they don't like it, they just huck them to minors.
That's right. And then the other signing is Ruslan Fedotenko. 1 year, $1.4 million. They re-signed him. I mean, the guy
How many times has Fedotenko been on the Rangers, the Lightning, and the Penguins? It seems
he's familiar with John Tortorella.
Fedotenko just kind of rotates around the Penguins, the Rangers,
he's fine. He contributes. He does what he does. I mean, he can kind of play. You can throw him up in the third or fourth line. If you need him, you can put him up in the first and second if you need him. He's a versatile guy who's, he is what he is. 1 year deals, again, we'll
he's
say that.
He's definitely one of the best mediocre players out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was once traded for the fourth overall pick in the draft by Tampa. He ended up scoring the winning goal in the Stanley Cup Finals, and Philly ended up taking Yoni Pekkanen with that pick.
So, yeah. But they won the cup. They play to win the game.
And that was,
one of those terrible deals, but they won the cup, so you can't really kill him
for it. Moving a little bit through to the New Jersey Devils. They made two signings yesterday. The big one was re-signing defenseman Andy Green, 4 years, $12 million, $3 million per year. And the other signing was getting Johan Hedberg back there to be Martin Brodeur's backup. 1 year, terms not released, so we're not sure on those yet.
I'll defer to Ezzy, but Green's a good puck mover.
Good puck mover who had a bad year last year, but...
Yeah, but everybody did there.
That's pretty much true.
They're thin on defense.
Andy Green was sought after, but they re-signed him. I don't really know why they didn't re-sign him before. Maybe there was issues there, but I like the signings. But the big signing coming up is Parise. That's the only signing that matters to me in New Jersey, and it's going to be interesting to see what he's worth. Because in my opinion, he should be getting paid, if not as much as Brad Richards, a little bit more. Parise, in my mind, is a top 10 forward in the NHL.
I agree. And the question is, I guess, is how does he recover from surgery? I'm assuming well.
Yeah.
But one thing needs to be taken into account so people know. He's an RFA, as listed in the paper, but because he's been given tendered arbitration,
exactly,
you can't
right.
give him an offer sheet. So he's New Jersey's. And to be honest with you, New Jersey would have a fairly strong case in arbitration because he's coming off an injury.
Yeah.
And that would work in their favor as opposed to all of his production the prior years.
That's right. If you have an RFA and you offer him and you take him to arbitration, which is a team's prerogative, that player is not eligible to be given an offer sheet by another franchise.
Well, guys, there's a few rumors that Langenbrenner might go back to New Jersey, but Tom Giulitti said that nobody was confirming or denying it
okay.
because he's a UFA as well. So
let's go to the New York Islanders, who made a signing. They got Marty Riesner. He came from Florida to New York. 2 years, $2.7 million, $1.35 million per season.
It's fine.
It's fine. You know, he's a professional. He'll be a good locker room influence on a young team there. You know, it's at 2 years and $1.35 million, it's fine. There's no real downside there at all.
The winners were the people who were inactive.
Yeah, or the ones who are very much, who didn't make big splashes. As Gary Lawless wrote in today's column, quoting Steve Simmons, he said, the winners are the teams that do next to nothing on free agency day. And that's true, because there's now that the craziness has subsided, there's no reason why you can't go out and get a decent free agent, the guys who are still on the market, for probably a little less than you'd would have had to pay him yesterday because of the hype and everything else that goes on.
Now maybe Tim Connolly and Jason Arnott, who are centers after Richards go, could be higher than maybe they would have thought before.
Exactly. Pittsburgh made a couple moves yesterday. They re-signed Tyler Kennedy, 2 years, $4 million, $2 million cap hit per year.
Great deal.
They signed Steve Sullivan, ex of the New York, of the Nashville Predators, 1 year, $1.5 million.
Great contract.
Both great.
If he stays healthy, I think that Sullivan deal.
It's a 1 year deal. It's 1.5, you said?
Yeah. Guy who knows how to score.
He's in his right-handed shot. He's creative with the puck. He's not as quick as he once was, but he has a nose for the net. He's certainly just going to be playing with talented players if they are healthy in Pittsburgh. What's the downside here? You don't give him a long-term contract. The upside is points, and there's hardly a downside. This is a great contract by one of the best GMs in the league, Ray Shiro.
The cream amongst GMs, the cream sort of separates from the crop when you see on free agency days the guys who don't lose their mind and maintain a plan and don't lose their composure and don't overpay and everything else. So I think, like you said, Ray Shiro did a good job in this Pittsburgh team. Tweaking it, fine-tuning it, adding some depth players, things of that nature. But the plan is still the same as it was all along. So
Drew, the signing, the Sullivan signing is good because, like Richie said, it's low risk and he's speedy and can play with talented players, compliment talented players. The Kennedy signing is good because the cap hit is good, the term is good.
Uh-huh.
And he's developed nicely. He's young and he's developed well on Pittsburgh. And I'm going to say this right now. I think with Crosby and Malkin coming back, and Philly, I don't know what Philly is doing.
Wow.
I think Pittsburgh's the favorite again going into right now as it stands is the best team in the Eastern Conference on paper.
I agree with that.
Okay, well, then it's been a good day for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. We'll be joined by our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Shortly past 9:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Find us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, you can find us on our website, www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
I'm starting to wonder. Maybe
our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times joins us yet again on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Anthony, it's been a whole 6 days since we last spoke. How are you?
I'm wondering if the Winnipeg Free Press has any openings. Because I think I'm on your show so much, I should probably just move there.
That would work for us. I'm sure we can. We'll talk to our buddy Gary Lawless, see if he can squeeze you in there somewhere along the lines.
Anthony, it's Ezra here. Were you? I was looking for you. Were you in Minneapolis for the draft? Because I was looking for you.
I actually was not in the draft in Minneapolis.
Okay.
We originally didn't plan on going because the Flyers didn't have a pick before the third round.
Okay.
Yeah, and then all and then all of a sudden you did have a pick.
Exactly.
Anthony, credit where credit is due. You were the first reporter to come out with the interest between the Flyers and Jaromir Jagr. It came to fruition yesterday. What were your thoughts when you reported on Friday evening that this might be a match?
I was really stunned, guys. I got to be honest with you. It really didn't seem like what the Flyers were looking for. We felt that the Flyers needed a big center, and yeah, they needed some help on the wing a little bit. But at the same time, I didn't think that Jagr was a fit for them. And so when I first heard about it, I thought, nah, maybe just kicking some tires to see if they can get him cheap. And then as it turns out, they ended up paying at least more than $1 million than the Penguins were willing to offer Jagr. So it was just really kind of a whirlwind, crazy thing. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. I want to see if they do so, if they get a center, if they get a big-time center. And I mean somebody other than Max Talbot. If they go out and do something today, which is there's still kind of rumblings that they might do something either via trade or they might still somehow be in the Brad Richards sweepstakes. I don't know how that's going to come to be. But if they do something else, then, yeah, Jagr makes sense. If they don't do something else, this is a head-scratcher.
You know, Anthony, they talk about Richards and Carter and being traded, you know, because of very, well, it could be because of locker room chemistry, at least. You've talked about that, and that's what we think. Then you bring Jaromir Jagr into the fold. He's never been known as the best locker room presence. How does that, you know, come to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting. I guess being 39, you know, and being a veteran guy, and I guess he before they even signed him, they had both Chris Pronger and Danny Briere talk to him to kind of get a feel for where he's at and what he's thinking. And those guys reported well back to Paul Holmgren and kind of gave him a thing that said, you know what, Jagr just wants to get back in the NHL. He's willing to be a team-oriented guy. He's changed his approach. He's all about fitness now, whereas before he really wasn't. He was more of a guy who was, he didn't feel like he had to keep up with the game. And, yeah, his legs are a little bit behind him at this point, but not his hands. He's still scoring more than a point a game in the KHL, which is not a bad league by any stretch of the imagination. And you know, so I think that they're willing to take the gamble. And it's in a lot of ways like the gamble that they took with Nikolai Sherdev last year. They gave him a one-year deal worth $2 million. And that didn't work out. So they're looking at it and saying, okay, so it's a little bit more money for a little bit more higher caliber player, and if it doesn't work out, well, it's only for 1 year. And if it works out, maybe they can give him to come back for a second season. Who knows?
Anthony, why did the Flyers decide to give Maxim Talbot such a long-term commitment?
I'm a little surprised by the term. The cap hit is not bad when you look at it. I mean, it's less than $2 million for 5 years. He is only 27, so it's not like he's an old player who's going to, you know, suddenly just fall apart at the end of that contract. But it did surprise me for such a role player type guy. What they said that they were going to do is they were going to go out and try and find the next Ian LaPerriere. And I think they think Maxime Talbot is that guy. And they originally signed LaPerriere, as you guys noticed, for 3 years, even though he was an older player. And so maybe they look at it and say, well, Talbot's a little bit younger. Maybe we'll give him an extra couple years, and then all of a sudden you got a guy in here who's going to kill penalties, who's going to do anything and everything to help your team, be a little bit of a pest, and just be a real character type of player, an energy guy, and that's something that they were sorely missing last year, and I think that's why they made the commitment. I think it's a little long for that kind of player. 3 years to me would have been fine, but if that's what it took to get it done, maybe that's what made him leave Pittsburgh with the commitment for 5 years, and so that's why they were willing to go the extra couple years.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on the line by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. Anthony, when you look at this team on paper, again, they have a ton of forward depth, you know, loaded up front, but are they not in the same situation as they were last year, where they're one Chris Pronger injury away from not being a real Stanley Cup contender?
Yeah, and I'm not even certain if they're a Stanley Cup contender status just yet right now. I mean, they have the depth up front, but again, they're really small down the middle. I mean, right now, if you look at who your centers are, Claude Giroux, Danny Briere, Braden Schenn, and Blair Betts. There's not a lot of good face-off men in there. There's not a lot of size in there. While they're bigger on the wings, I think they get physically abused down the middle. And, you know, face-offs are a very big part of the game, especially in your own zone, especially on penalty kills. I think that there's got to be – that's why I don't think they're done. I think that there is another big play coming by the Flyers. I don't think they trade Christopher Stieg yesterday for two future draft picks unless they knew that they were trying to position themselves to do something else. They created a little bit more cap room. They're about $4.2 million under the cap right now. And then there's some more things they could do creatively, like waive Michael Layton and waive Matt Walker and give themselves another $3.2 million. Ian LaPerriere will go on long-term injuries, another $1.1 million. So really the Flyers are over $8.5 million under the cap right now. That gives them an opportunity to really be a player for somebody. And so I really think something else is coming. And listening to Paul Holmgren talk yesterday at the end of the night, he said that he wasn't leaving the office. You know, this was 8 o'clock last night, our time. And he said, we're not leaving the office. We're staying here for a little while, trying to get something done. Who knows? Maybe it'll get done tonight. If not, hopefully tomorrow. So I think something else is coming. And then if, in fact, they make a big splash in some way today, whether it be trade or Brad Richards, I think that could then change the feeling of, is this team ready to be a Stanley Cup contender or not?
Anthony, you bring up the fact, you know, this is what always puzzles me about the Flyers. You bring up the fact about possibly waiving Matt Walker and possibly waiving Michael Layton and then trading Christopher Stieg. It always seems to me that there's never really a plan. I mean, there's an overall plan, but it doesn't seem to be followed on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, you bring in Walker, and you sign Layton, and then you acquire Versteeg, and then they're all gone within a year or so. And you wonder why these guys were acquired in the first place.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I mean, the one thing about the Flyers is they do change their mind rather quickly and rather drastically, for that matter. To sit here and think that it was only 13 months ago that the Flyers were in the Stanley Cup Final and within two games away of winning the whole thing, and now you've blown up that team completely. You've got to kind of question the direction that the team is headed in, and say, well, you look at it, okay, they're getting younger. They stockpile a lot of talent, a lot of draft picks, a lot of prospects, and that's never a bad thing, even especially for a team that contends. But at the same time, did they not hurt themselves and hurt their chances of winning this year? And the window is going to close on guys like Chris Pronger and Kimmo Timonen. Uh-huh. I really think that if you want to win with those two guys as your anchors on defense, you got to do it either this season or next season. So, yeah, you got to question why it keeps changing. And I think part of it has to do with the fact that, you know, owner Ed Snyder is 78 years old now. He really, really wants to win one more time before he rides off into the sunset. So I think it's a little bit of impatience. And so that can come back and hurt the Flyers for certain.
Sure. Now, on Brad Richards, did they make him an offer, and do you know the terms?
I do not know the terms. Paul had said that they had spoken several times yesterday over the phone. I'm sure that they faxed an offer in there. And one of the things that happened yesterday, talking to a couple of people that I usually talk to, gives me the information that I get. Sometimes when you're sniffing down the right path, they kind of give you a complete, no, it ain't going to work. Yeah, we're interested in that, it ain't going to happen. And then you sit there, they're trying to get you off the path, and it turns out that in fact, is exactly what they were doing. The same people gave me that thing on Yager the night before, and
right.
Yet someone was willing to tell me that, that they were in on Yager, so I was able to write that. So I don't believe them when they say we can't do it. I think that they have a way that they can do it.
Anthony, were there any other UFAs that were signed yesterday that the Flyers were, you know, close to signing or missed out on?
I'm not sure about missing out on, but I know they were interested in Michael Hontzius. They really wanted to get a big center, a big third line center in. And to be honest with you, I went through a crazy thing in the morning where I was told that the deal was done, and I actually reported it, and then it turned out that it was not, and he ended up signing in San Jose, so I ended up looking pretty bad on that one, but trusted someone that I trusted before and came through for me, and this time didn't, so but those things happen. But then you look at it, I think, as far as players that they had, if they didn't sign Andreas Lilja, which was another questionable signing yesterday. I just don't see it. He had a horrible year in Anaheim.
That's right.
I know he's a veteran, and they're looking maybe 6th, 7th defenseman for him. They could have brought back Sean O'Donnell cheaper. And it could have worked. And O'Donnell wanted to stay. That didn't work out for them. And Villalena, of course. But they were never going to be in that ballpark. You know, Villalena's agent, Bill Zito, insisted his client was worth $4 or more million. The Flyers were never willing to go more than 3.5 and Leno followed the money to Buffalo. So there's three guys, two of which were on the team last year that they were kind of in the hunt for, and it didn't quite work out.
Anthony, last question here. You know, this, of the free agents that are still on the market, or of the players that they could potentially acquire by trade, who do you see as the one guy that's probably going to end up as a Philadelphia Flyer?
I'm going to say Simone Gagné.
Okay.
Coming back. I know one of the things that Paul said last night was he talked to Bob Sauvé, Simone's agent, a couple of times yesterday. They exchanged a couple of ideas. There's interest on both sides, and that they might see something work out today if they can, both sides can make things work. In that regard, I think that is a fallback plan for the Flyers. I think that whatever it is that they're working out here, and I think it's a trade. I don't see them getting Brad Richards. Mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe, but I don't see it. I think that they're working something else bigger in a trade, a big name player, and no one will say anything. If that falls through, I think Gagné is the answer, and ultimately, I think that's probably the safest play. And if it is, it's a nice player to bring back. It would do really well, with the fan base and everything else, to bring somebody who was beloved here back into the fold. I still don't think it makes them a better team than they were last year.
Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Anthony. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Later.
We have to get a break. We got Tim coming up, but Amazing that they're trying to reacquire Gagné after taking on the Mezeros and Walker contract last year. As we talked about there, there's a big plan that generally they follow fairly well in terms of accumulating talent, but their day-to-day moves.
And then they go a little bit crazy. About once a year, they go a little bit crazy. Maybe twice a year, they go a little bit crazy. July 1st and the trade deadline, they go a little bit batty. Other than that,
always the trade deadline.
They're consistent in that. That's why we have Anthony on every second hour, because they seem to always make news.
Always have something to talk about.
Well, you have a texting relationship with Anthony, too, don't you, Drew?
I do. That's on the DL, though. Anyways, let's head to break. When we come back, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10 minutes to 10 a.m. on this Saturday morning. I should point out it's our final Saturday morning show of the summer. We're going to take Saturday mornings off, but we will be on various weeknights throughout the summer. I think we're on the next two Wednesdays, and then we're on a Monday, then four Thursdays, and then I think another Monday. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, follow us at www.illegalcurve.com, and we'll continue to update you on when we're going to be on the air.
And, Drew, follow the black limousine that me, Tim, and Richard are taking to the Black Keys concert tonight at the MTS Center. Follow that black limo, because we're riding in style tonight for my favorite band, and I know these guys love the Black Keys, but we're all going to the Black Keys tonight.
By limo, you mean bus.
Nobody cares.
I care.
Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press, do you care that Ezzy's going to the Black Keys concert tonight?
No, but I like the sound of that limo.
I just figured that limo's parked outside your house all the time.
Yeah, we're gonna. I wish.
We're thinking of inviting Patrick Kane and Christopher Stieg in that limo, but... Tim is speechless.
Tim, good morning again. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks very much. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets' activity, or lack thereof, in yesterday's free agency frenzy, as it was being dubbed. Were you surprised by the lack of activity?
No, and actually, I think if I'm a fan, I'm actually pretty happy with my team, because They did what they said they were going to do.
They didn't make any big mistakes.
They did not go crazy, or they did not start chasing after players after, you know, being pretty pretty consistent in their message, and I'd say in the last 10 days, you know, starting with just before the draft when they finally had a chance to meet up with their scouts and take stock of the roster and the reserve list and what the draft would hold. And, you know, I think Kevin Cheveldayoff has been pretty clear since a little bit before the draft that, you know, there wasn't going to be any point in chasing about on free agent day trying to, you know, land all kinds of players. You know, because frankly, I don't, you know, I'm sure they have an opinion on, you know, the major league roster of players they have and the minor league roster of players they have. But, you know, having not seen the whole machine in action, you know, for any period of time at all, except from afar, and through different colored glasses in other jobs, I mean, how can you actually know what it is you've inherited or what you're in possession of? So, you know, I think rather than blow the whole thing up and start over, the Florida Panthers did that, I guess, but
yeah.
They had a bit of a head start. Rather than do that, I think they quite like some of the young players that they have on this Jets team. And, you know, I think they feel somewhat compelled to find out, what the good people in Atlanta, especially Rick Dudley, who's not a dumb hockey man, I mean, what they were trying to do and what they were starting to build. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger feel really compelled to find out, you know, what that is right now. So this is the way you have to do it. You have to, you know, put on your handcuffs on July 1st. They wrote a couple of small checks yesterday, but I wouldn't say anything horribly significant, and they'll go about. Maybe they've got a few trades in mind. I've heard some rumblings of that, but you know, they've got to find out. So, you know, we'll start the process of finding out in September.
Any particular you've heard regarding the trade rumblings?
Well, no, actually, apart from the Richards rumor last week,
sure.
That they put some consideration to. Some feelers from the Flyers, and then they decided it wasn't what was being asked and what the kind of transaction the Flyers were contemplating with them, you know, wasn't going to be for them. There was too much of a subtraction, so they took a pass on that. But, I would not be surprised in the least if, you know, there have been 10 other things that have come across Kevin Cheveldayoff's desk, and maybe he's initiated a few of them. Wouldn't surprise me. As I said, I'm sure they all have opinions and assessments of all their players, but really, having not, you know, watched them with the microscope and the magnifying glass for any period of time, there is a couple of exceptions that, you know, Kevin will know players like Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien probably a little better than most because they were part of the organization he was part of a year beyond ago. I just think that he's probably got some irons in the fire. It's clear they're the same as they were before at center. They look to be pretty thin in the middle. You can't rush the draft picks along. Maybe there's a surprise from their prospects at training camp, but wow, if you're relying on that to make the playoffs, it's probably a pretty tough road. So, a little bit of patience and don't go spending money crazily like some teams did yesterday and some teams had to yesterday. I think they've just stayed the course. It's a short course so far, only 10 to 12 days really they've been at it, but I'll give them credit. They've done what they said they were going to do.
Was there anybody, Tim, that they were in on that they didn't end up landing?
Well, you know, I have no idea on that because they didn't invite me down to the office to run these up the flagpole. There were some rumblings at the draft that the Jets had some feelers in the water, trying to maybe drum up some interest. Obviously, I would say after, 10 days after that process was going on, because it probably started in earnest early to midweek of draft week, they haven't pulled the trigger on anything. That certainly doesn't mean they won't, because in my view, a lot of trades in the NHL in this modern era are not trades done in a day or even two. They're sort of longer discussions. both sides will examine contracts of players being discussed and also their own contract needs. I mean, some teams, you know, as you're seeing, need to add salary in a desperate way. Other teams need to, you know, shuffle it out of town in some way. So a lot of trades aren't necessarily about getting players of equal value. A lot of it is money management, and it's a way managers can make up for, you know, past errors or misjudgments, and everybody has them. You know, there's no manager that can walk out on the street and say, my contract record with all kinds of players is perfect. So everybody's trying to manage money. And, you know, in a way, the Jets are, too. And they've got some pretty important free agents they need to spend. They need to spend up a little bit to make sure they're at the floor, and they promise to go a little beyond. I wonder now, though, if they'll be able to go much beyond, apart from giving some of their RFAs some wild raises. You know, I'm thinking today, unless there's some pretty important or interesting or, you know, excellent as far as the fans are concerned trade in the works, I think they might have a tough time spending to the midpoint that they said they probably would.
Tim, you mentioned that there were rumblings that the Jets might make a trade, and you know there were some discussions with the Flyers. Do you know of any UFAs that are still out there that they actually might be targeting now that the initial July 1st insanity has died down?
Well, you know, I haven't had any time at all. I basically took yesterday off. I had 5 minutes I gave myself to look at the free agent signings later yesterday, and you know, my eyes certainly rolled at a few. But I haven't been able to take that list of UFAs and match it up to see who's left. You know, generally there are a few players around that, you know, don't get signed for a week or two or even five in some cases, you know, depending on what the desperation factor is with the given number of teams. I think I was a bit surprised yesterday at just how many free agents of all right. categories were signed. I remember free agent day being busy in the past, but I don't know if it's because I'm paying more attention to it this time around, but I was quite taken by just the volume of players that, you know, signed up yesterday. And this just goes to show you how prepared some of these teams are. And they didn't sit down last night and have a little meeting and say to their scouts, oh, what do you think of this guy? Or do you think we should take a run at that guy? I mean, this is something that clearly most teams have been working on for a month, if not longer. What to do on July 1st. It's a pretty important day for a lot of teams.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there for a second, Tim. It looks like Brad Richards is officially going to the Rangers. The terms haven't been released,
okay.
It's been tweeted that he's going to the Rangers.
Okay. Yeah, that's always better to say it that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tim, an update on the RFA negotiations. Ladd, Bogosian, we know the players that they have to re-sign.
Well, you know, I can't tell you. I've been chasing that a lot this week, but I've certainly read my most capable colleague, Ed Tate, who's been watching that stuff this week. And, you know, I did see one optimistic message, I think, from Ladd's agent, you know, that the chat has continued, and the conversations have been very constructive. I even thought I saw the word progress had been texted to him this week. So I would take that as a good sign. I don't see... you know, in my view here, I don't see any point for any of these players' agents to start rattling sabers in front of a new franchise. You know, general managers are by and large pretty responsible. Kevin Cheveldayoff certainly strikes me as that kind of guy. You know, they're under the gun here as far as getting this franchise going. I think the agents are understanding. I really don't see there being any issue, you know, that we've gone now past July 1st and you know, these three pretty important players are not signed yet. I wouldn't read anything at all into that. It's, to me, strictly still a function of they're just running a bit behind because their day books are so full. You know, and I think these players, I don't think Bogosian even has arbitration rights, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right about that. Yeah.
And so, you know, he's a player in particular that it's kind of no man's land. If you're not going to get an offer sheet, you really don't have a lot of leverage other than to withhold your services. That's and it. Just, you know, not sign and sit out or go to Europe, or, you know, there isn't a lot of leverage for his kind of guy. He's one of those limbo guys He will have arbitration rights, if not next year, the year after. I'd have to look exactly at age and the rules and whatnot. But, you know, it's usually a short post-entry level period where some players, you know, are kind of caught in the middle. They don't have much push. But that said, I mean, I don't think any responsible general manager is going to just let a guy like that rot on the shelf. You know, you're going to make an effort to sign him because you want his talents and his offense, especially in his case, in the lineup. And plus, you know, I have to think a player like Bogosian, who, you know, is said by many to have maybe stagnated a little bit in the last, you know, the last season, maybe season plus in Atlanta, you know, would be really eager for a fresh start, just kind of a new place. I can't imagine he disliked Atlanta at all, but, you know, when you put 18-year-old players into the lineup, and he, I don't want to suggest they rushed his development there. They certainly would have had to do it in Atlanta because of need, and he's probably that good. But, you know, no player has a smooth path to stardom or front line ship or whatever you want to call it. You know, so Zach is probably one of these guys that has had some fits and starts in his development and his career. He's a young player playing probably the hardest position, which is defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to think he'd be eager to, you know, get the ball rolling here with a new group and a new start here in Winnipeg. I have no worry that any of these three guys are going to get signed. I think Kevin Cheveldayoff realizes these guys are important. And this is just kind of this odd business of the franchise relocation right now. You know, and even I would throw this out there, and you might think I'm nuts, but... You know, I would think if this even drags on another 2 or 3 weeks with any of these three guys, I wouldn't be panicking quite yet, just because this situation is so unusual here this summer. I mean, unless there are some, you know, some breakdown of negotiations to become apparent, you know, an agent might make a comment or the team might get frustrated and say something. Unless we find out that there's been some kind of impasse, you know, this is just going to take a little time, and I would have a lot of faith in Kevin Cheveldayoff to start with, that he's going to make these things get done. And even if it takes a little more time, I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Yeah, Tim, to clarify, I think reading the rules right here, Bogosian will have arbitration after next year because he'll be a 21-year-old with 4 years of professional
experience. Yeah, that's
experience.
Right. And that sounds right. So it's one of those situations where, you know, a player out of entry level, you know, he's just simply got to suck it up. If he, you know, if he doesn't get everything he wants or it's not in an offer, he's going to just, you know, he's just going to have to go out and earn that big contract, you know, one more year. So it's not a lot to ask, I don't think, for a fourth-year player. And it's all part of the checks and balances of the system. Like, you know, go out and earn it. If you think you're worth the big dough, you know, get out there and earn it. And, you know, if you do that, you know, it's a no-lose situation for you if you have a good season. It's no-lose.
It is. Tim, final question here. Do you know why the team didn't qualify Anthony Stewart?
Well, I don't know, other than, you know, I haven't asked Kevin Cheveldayoff that question directly. He wasn't inclined to comment on any individuals there last week when we certainly had a lot of access to him at the draft. But I just have to think it's, you know, they reviewed the track record and... they just decided it's probably time for a fresh start on both ends, and they were probably reluctant to commit the money to a player like that it might take to sign him. I want to say I'm a little surprised, but, you know, when a first-round pick just, you know, hasn't done the volume of work that you might think or might expect, I think we've seen in Anthony's case you know, some level of expectations not being met for a variety of reasons. Situations often have a lot to do with it, what team you're on and how you fit in. So I just think they've decided to pull a fresh start on that one. A bit surprising. You know, if they've done anything surprising so far, I guess that would have to qualify as it. And to me, that's not a very big problem.
Tim Campbell, the Winnipeg Free Press, thanks very much, as always, for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Are you guys enjoy your Saturdays off for the rest of the summer.
Thank you. Well, don't worry, Tim. You're not getting away from us. We'll still get you on Wednesday nights and Thursday nights and whenever else.
Okay. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's head to break. Before we go to break, 9 years, $6.5 million per season on average for Brad Richards. It's a 9-year, $58.5 million contract. Long term, but the AAV doesn't shock me.
The AAV is reasonable.
Yeah, it's a long term. He's going to be 40 when the contract's up, but the AAV is not bad.
The concussion problems are a worry on a 9-year deal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't sign that deal.
Yeah.
He's got a good agent, Drew.
Signing a guy on the wrong side of 30, Drew.
Yeah, he's 31. He's going to be until 40 on that contract. We'll see. Anyways, we'll talk about it a little bit more. Coming up after the break, Mark Seidel, Chief Scout for North American Central Scouting. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show shortly after 10 o'clock in the morning. In case you missed any of the first hour, we were joined by Anthony Sanfilippo of the Delaware County Daily Times, Tim Campbell of the Winnipeg Free Press. The show will be available for download on iTunes. Search and subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Get the show sent to your iPod each and every week automatically. And, of course, you can follow us along at www.illegalcurve.com and on Twitter at Illegal Curve and Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve. Let's go back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined on the line now by Mark Seidel, Chief Scout for North American Central Scouting. Mark, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Happy Canada Day. Yeah, I'm doing very well. You know what? Recovered from the draft. That's certainly a long process leading up to it. So it's been a week of trying to sort of take some time, get some work done, but also try and get a little bit of family time as well.
There you go. Sounds like a good work-family balance, that sort of thing. Mark, you gave the Winnipeg Jets draft class an A+. What impressed you so much about their selections?
You know what? I just thought that as you went through the draft, you know, obviously when you're going through the draft, and we provide our rankings as if we're the 31st NHL team, so we don't, you know, we don't look at position. Well, we do look at position, but we don't look at team needs or any of that kind of stuff. And it just seemed to us that every time Winnipeg stepped up and made a pick, it seemed to be phenomenal value for where they got the kid. And they got some kids that have huge upside. You know, and there's some questions and there's reasons they got guys like an Austin Brassard a little lower than everybody probably thought he was going to go. But, you know, he has had some disappointing moments in his career. But, I mean, the upside on this kid is huge. And, you know, I just thought that when you went through it, Zach Yoon was probably my favorite player in the draft. And to get him where they did, you know, in the fourth round, I thought was phenomenal. So, you know, the more we went through it, and when we grade these drafts, it's really kind of a, you know, I hate to say it's a silly process, but who knows, right? I mean, the proof will be 5, 6, 7 years down the road, and you can look back and then grade them properly. But, you know, people ask for our opinion and our grading system, and so we give it to them. And, you know, just based on that, we thought they had a phenomenal weekend. And really, you know, they were behind the eight ball. If you look at the situation and the transfer of the team and, you know, Kevin Shaveldayoff and Craig Heisinger coming in and not having a full year and Dan Marr, the head scout with Atlanta, not being retained, you know, I thought they were going to be in trouble. And it turned out, you know, they were plenty prepared and did what I thought was an amazing job.
Mark Scheifele was a little bit off the board. Can you tell us a little bit about his game and maybe how you see him developing? And also, is there a player that you would compare him to that currently plays in the NHL?
Well, Mark Scheifele is a kid that 2 years ago played Junior B. He was thinking about going the NCAA route. So Barry took him, I think it was the seventh round. They took him in the OHL draft. I'm not sure on that. But then Dale Hawerchuk convinced him to report this year. And as the season went on, every time you go see them play, guys would be like, geez, you know, that Scheifele kid's pretty good. I mean, Barry might have been one of the worst teams in major junior hockey this year. They took a run 2 years ago, and they really blew it up trying to rebuild last year. So Scheifele had very few players to play with. But every time he came away, you thought, man, that kid is pretty impressive. And so as the season went on, certainly there was some mixed division, even within our own staff, but also within, you know, the scouting circles. Then he went to the under-18 championships, and really that was the coming-out party for him, where he was able to play with some better players. I think he was Canada's best forward and probably, arguably, one of the top three forwards in the entire tournament. You know, he was named to Canada's three. Each team gets three All-Stars. They get sort of selected three stars from each team, and he was one of them for Canada, and had a phenomenal tournament. It really showed that if he had some players to play with, he can step up. And I think that's when guys started to really figure this kid could be a top 10 pick. And, you know, as far as an NHL comparison, you know, and again, that's a tough thing, but it seems ironic with yesterday and with the whole Brad Richards watch, but he's a guy that he reminds me of a little bit. I can see that on it, and it's pretty heady praise. Jonathan Toews is another guy. Certainly the folks in Winnipeg would know him well. You know, but and they're both high-end superstars in the NHL, but this kid really has that kind of smarts, maybe not quite as much leadership at Toews. I mean, there's not many playing the game that have as much as he does, but but they play a similar game. He's equally adept at scoring as well as setting up guys. He distributes the puck very well, so I just thought it was a great pick. I thought, and I know there were a lot of teams a couple picks down were hoping he'd slide. I mean, everybody thought he'd be a, you know, a 12 to 15, pick in 12 to 15 range, and for Winnipeg to step up and take him when they did, I thought was genius, and I think as we go forward, you'll see that this kid, you know, should have belonged probably in the talk of the top five or six guys.
And also, Mark, there's definitely not any shortage of Barry Colts on the Winnipeg Jets with Brian Little and Alexander Burmistrov, right? So the Jets had two third-round picks. Their first third-round pick was Adam Lowry, who, you know, has the hockey pedigree there, obviously, as the son of Dave Lowry. What kind of player do you think he's going to develop into?
I think realistically, you know, I think the best upside is that he becomes a big power forward that, you know, can, you know, put 15, 20 pucks in the net a year. That's probably the hugest upside that he has now. You know, and that's pretty good if you can get a guy to do that. You know, this is a kid that, and we're a big believer at NACS about bloodlines, good and bad. We really believe in sons. We believe in brothers. You know, like I said, if a brother is good, then we seem, you know, we feel pretty comfortable that the other one, because they've been raised the same, they've gone through the same kind of experiences. So, you know, and this was a kid whose dad did everything. He got every ounce of talent out of his body he possibly could and survived in the NHL a long time. And I think that this kid is similar. Now, this kid's got great size. He's not afraid at all. I mean, he is definitely fearless. He'll go in the dirty areas. I think he'll bring a bit of a pugilistic as he gets a little bit older, a little bit stronger, a little more confident. I think he'll show that he can probably drop the mitts on occasion if he has to. But he's the new breed of power forward. He's a guy that can go to the net, has a good stick, and we'll see exactly what where he ends up. But, you know, he's a guy, we talk about comparisons. I think if you think of the upside, Ryan Clough is a guy that kind of comes to mind for me. If he could become Ryan Clough, I think Winnipeg fans would be ecstatic. And I think, you know, worst-case scenario, I think he's Taylor Pyatt. And very similar, his dad played, has that hockey IQ that's through the roof. And, you know, and sometimes his feet have to get going a little bit more. But, again, he has to get stronger. He's just growing into that big 6'4 frame. So, you know, I think, again, a real solid pick and certainly higher than we had him.
And, Mark, he wasn't even the only Lowry picked.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. I think he was, I like him. I mean, I think he's better than the other kid, but I could be wrong on that.
We're joined on the line by Mark Seidel. He's the chief scout for North American Central Scouting. Mark, the Jets traded back into the third round, giving up two fourth-round picks in order to select Brennan Serville. What can you tell us about Serville and his game?
Well, like I talked about Shifley wanting to go the NCAA route, the Serville kid is going to go the NCAA route. He's going to Michigan, so you know that if Red Berenson and those guys recruited him, you know he's certainly a high-end prospect. And I think what happened, you know, obviously reading the tea leaves, I think those guys couldn't believe that Serville fell to them where he did. And, you know, they made that pick, and I think it was a good value pick. This is a kid that certainly OHL teams have been all over to come in and play. Because they realize that he could come in and really be a difference maker in the Ontario Hockey League. Now, the Ontario Tier 2 League is certainly not the equivalent of, you know, even the BCHL or the Alberta or even the Manitoba League. So it's difficult to evaluate them. We've seen some guys that have kind of fooled us at times. But as a big defenseman, I think he's pretty skilled. You know, and you see him some nights against a bad team, and he looks like he's Nicholas Lidstrom out there. And then other nights, you know, there's some real good teams, and he shows that he's a guy that's going to be very safe, very dependable, not ever going to put up a ton of points, but be a very good guy that, you know, hopefully upside, you know, is that in the last 2 minutes he's a guy you'll put out there. And he's going to be a long-term project. They're going to send him to Michigan, although I know the OHL teams are really trying to put a lot of pressure on him to come and report. Sudbury owns his rights, I think. Yeah, I think they do. And they're going to really try and put pressure on the agent to say, hey, come and play for us and step up. And, you know, that'll depend on what Kevin and Craig believe is the best route for him. I'm sure Michigan is a good route. It's a good development program. They hold his rights for a longer time. And NHL comparisons, geez. You know, a guy we just saw in the NHL final, Adam McQuaid, you know, I think is a guy who actually played for Sudbury as well. But the same thing, very dependable, off the glass, you know, at times can make a play. But, you know, and Adam McQuaid is certainly getting better. But I think Brendan mm-hmm. Serville could become something like that. Or even Mike Weber, the kid in Buffalo, you know, the kid that, again, they're never going to be the flashiest guys and not going to be in your three stars probably a whole lot of time. But coaches love those kind of defensemen that they can put out there and feel pretty comfortable with.
Mark, Zach Ewan, you spoke highly about him. What do you like about his game, and what does he, you know, what does he bring to the table?
Well, Zach Ewan, as I said earlier, probably my favorite player in the draft, and you know, he was one of those guys that when I saw him early, nobody was even talking about him at all, and I thought, man, am I, you know, sometimes you find a player, and for some reason they do things you like, and you think, geez, am I out in left field here? So, you know, I got to see him quite a bit this year. I took seven, I think, trips out west this year, which was great, and our Western League guys saw him a lot, but. You know, this is a kid I think has huge upside. And I know that's a catchphrase and people get sick and tired of it, but I really think that this kid has a chance to be a very, very good defenseman. And, you know, as an NHL comparer, I mean, really, because he can do it all, you know, I think he's got some offensive ability. I think he can move the puck and create some plays. He certainly takes care of his own end. He can be physical. He will drop the mitts if he has to. I mean, I really like them. And you know what? We've been fooled in the past by guys occasionally, but I got to tell you, in the history of certainly of our service, when there's guys like him that we really fell in love with, for the most part, we've been pretty good on them. You know, as far as NHL comparable, man, that's, you know what? A guy that jumped to mind, I know early when I saw him, and I just thought this kid could become Ryan Suter. You know, and that's pretty heady praise. Yeah. Again, Ryan was a second-generation player, a first-round pick, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Ryan Suter does everything well. And I think Zach Ewan can become that. And, you know, guys are going to say, I mean, how do you get a kid at 112 that's Ryan Suter? But, you know, I just think, I really think this kid has a lot of upside, and we really, really like the way he played. And we'll see how it pans out. But he certainly has to get stronger, obviously, to play at the NHL level. All these kids do. But, you know, he shows a spark in his game, a feistiness that I like, and an ability to basically do everything.
Mark, I know beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but why was he available in the fifth round?
You know what? That's a good question. We did a thing. We published a I worked for the Hockey Night in Canada and CBC, so I did up a little bit of a draft primer, and one of the categories, they asked me a bunch of categories and said, can you fill them in? And one of them was guys that are going to go lower. And number one on that list was Zach Ewan. I just knew he was going to go lower than he should. I'm not entirely sure why. You know, I think there were things that you saw him where he looked indifferent a little bit, so I think certainly consistency is an issue. You know, he's a kid that I can't believe he fell that far. I was really shocked. Certainly we had him at, I think we had him at 52, and if it was my own personal ranking, I would have had him much higher than that. So I can't tell you why the teams dropped him, but, you know, it's just one of those things that when you're in that draft and you're looking at your list and you know, the kid isn't there, you know, I mean, Winnipeg probably, if they got him in the fourth round, they probably had him rated in the second round. You know, that's where it worked. Guys fall, and they were certainly fortunate to get him, but I can't answer why he dropped other than maybe consistency.
Mark, Austin Brassard, Jason Kasdorf, and Aaron Harstad were the last three selections for the Jets in the late rounds of the draft. Did the Jets get good value here for these last three selections?
Same thing. I really do believe they did. Austin Brassard, I'm telling you, with this kid, and God, I hate the term upside. I'm sorry, guys. It just drives me nuts. You hear it so often, but.
As long as you're not dropping wingspan, we're good.
Yeah, well, that's it. It was the NBA draft. We're talking wingspan here and length. But anyways, Austin Brassard is a kid that coming into the league, and certainly when he was in Windsor, guys thought this kid could become a difference maker in the OHL. Has all kinds of ability. I'm not sure how much passion he has, how much true love of the game he has. I don't know that. When he interviewed him, and he came across a little bit. So that certainly scared a lot of teams, I think. And that's a concern that we have as well. But, I mean, you're talking about a power forward in the NHL with good hands. Will drop the gloves again as a guy who's willing to stand up for his teammates. And you know, if you don't want to play the game, you're not really going to fight. You know, I've seen enough players in my time that who sort of have that, you know, half-hearted effort out there. And last thing they're going to do is drop the gloves and fight. So I do think he has a passion in him. I just think he has to get focused. And I really think that'll be the job of Kevin and Craig and the coaching staff to try and get him motivated to say, listen, you got a chance at an NHL career. But, I mean, this kid is strong. He does a great job in the corners. He works the puck down low. The cycle to the game is very good. And, again, a guy that we had him rated much higher. But I really think that the interview process, when guys will go through it and stuff, I just think he comes across a little bit as vanilla milkshake. There's not a lot to him. Nice kid, certainly not a bad kid anyway, but just not necessarily that passion. But if he figures it out, this kid could be a steal where he is. The Kasdorf kid is a big goaltender, certainly played in the Manitoba League. I only personally saw him play twice. Our Western League guy saw him, or Western Canada scout, I guess, saw him more than I did. Liked him. Certainly think he has some athleticism. And, you know, the new trend is big goaltenders, and this kid certainly has it. He's got good size. He protects the lower half of the net real well. And, I mean, really, when you're talking 18-year-old players in general, it's a crapshoot. When you're talking 18-year-old goaltenders, I mean, really, you know, who knows? You know, you never know. But
and, Mark, we should, just to cut you off, we should mention that he's going to RPI, right, next year?
Yes. I'm sorry. I should have said that, I guess. But, yeah, he's the... So, you know what, when you're picking in the sixth round and you've got a 6'4 goaltender, I think, sitting there that has shown he can play, he's going to go to the NCAA, so you know he's going to have him for the next 4 or 5 years, you're no rush to sign him, and you hope he develops. So, you know, the Harstad kid had already been through draft, I think. He played better this year, and I just think that's a case of you look in the seventh round, you say, now, who's probably the most talented kid that's out there that has fallen? You know, with a lot of question marks, this kid certainly has some of those question marks with him. Again, he had to go back to consistency, but he had some of that. He had a better season this year, but again, good size. You know, I'm a little leery of the USHL. I always have been. I'm not sure. I think they can fool you out there, and I don't know if the Harstad kid is going to fool anybody or not, or if he turns out to be what they think. But if you can get, a 6'2", 6'3 defenseman that's going to go to school, you know, I think you're going to end up in a situation where you've got 4 or 5 years, and if he develops, great. And if not, it was a seventh-round pick.
Mark Seidel, Chief Scout of North American Central Scouting, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem. Thanks, guys. You do a great job, and anything I can ever do to help, feel free to let me know.
Appreciate that. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Let's head to commercial break. When we come back after this, another guest, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.